Power on.
Hi, friends, and welcome to the Pop Culture Retro-Rama podcast. I'm your host, Vic Sage, and I'm here to share memories, thoughts, and information on all manner of retro-related properties. Movies.
Are you telling me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Music.
I want my MTV. All right.
Comic books.
These ain't your daddy's comic books, fanboy.
And toys.
It's Castle Grayskull. And it's mine.
Broadcasting to you from the depths of the Retroist Vault. So, come join us, won't you?
Now, you're playing with power.
Hey there, listeners. And thanks for joining us on this first episode of the Pop Culture Retro-Rama podcast. And I won't lie to you, it feels incredibly weird to be doing this first show, and it just happens to be a holiday special. Just in case you weren't aware, for the past 8 years, I have been a regular contributor to the Retroist website. My love of sharing the personal memories of my youth in regards to toys, video games, and films keeps me posting nearly every day. That joy of sharing a cherished memory and finding that so many, many other people have the same likes or sometimes dislike is an amazing feeling. Over the years, thanks in no small part to The Retroist's very own podcast, as well as the likes of the Throwback Reviews podcast, the Atari 2600 Game by Game podcast, and numerous others, it planted the seed in my head to attempt something similar. My love of horror movies is what led me to create the Saturday Frights podcast, which I have the pleasure to co-host with The Projectionist. Many of my most fondest memories as a kid involve arcades and video games. So, when I became an employee of a retro arcade in my neck of the woods, the experiences of my youth with those games led to the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast. And growing up, listening to my grandparents tell me stories related to old-time radio shows helped me to create the Retro Radio Memories podcast. Thanks for bearing with me on the info dump. The issue was, though, all of those podcasts, and even a future podcast which is cartoon-themed called the Tune-In Podcast, are all based on a specific subject. So, if I got the itch to tackle 1984's The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai, well, which of those podcasts would that fit into? Thanks to The Retroist and my fellow writers on the website, we now have the Pop Culture Retro-Rama Podcast. If I decide to talk about Debbie Gibson on one episode, I can do so. And then, on the very next show, I might discuss DC Comics, The Challengers of the Unknown, or The Visionaries toy line, etc. And while I will be sole host on this podcast, I might have some guests on the show from time to time to talk about a particular subject. Which leads us to the subject of this particular episode, a first episode that is in fact a holiday special. To help break in the podcast, I asked some friends from The Retroist to send in some of their favorite holiday memories, whether that be of a favorite toy or the memory of a movie or TV holiday special. Which is going to be quite helpful, friends, as I found myself stuck here in the Retroist vault for the holiday season. A blizzard moved into the area, and while my coworkers were able to get out in time, I kind of missed the last flight out. Don't get me wrong, there are far worse places to be stranded during the holidays. Here in the Retroist vault, we have the world's largest collection of retro, well, everything. Are you looking for those vintage 1978 Star Wars drinking glasses from Burger King? A quick trip down to the Retro's Vault food court and you will be shocked to find they're being served if you order a meal. We don't ask how the Retroist does it. We're just glad that he has managed to create this living time capsule. Oh, we have our first guest ready to share their holiday memories. Looks like it's none other than the robot's pajamas.
I was 5 years old in 1983, and we were doing our Christmas shopping at a store called Fleet Farm. My fellow Midwesterners will know the store well. I remember spotting a little ornament of a deer. For some reason I thought, man, this would look good hanging on Rudolph's antler. Why Rudolph in particular? Well, he was and is my favorite reindeer. Not only is he the one with the famous movie and song, but also because my last name is Rudolph. I asked my parents if they could get the ornament because I was 5 and had no income by that point. They were gracious enough to buy it, and I happily left the store with a gift for my favorite reindeer. On Christmas Eve, we had the tradition of leaving out milk and cookies for Santa, as many families do. In addition to the treats for Santa, I also left out the ornament for Rudolph, along with a note for Santa explaining the situation. We figured he'd be honest enough to pass the gift along for us, because he had proved himself to be a pretty stand-up guy so far, what with him giving me presents every year. The next morning when I woke up, I was super excited and sick from the anticipation for Christmas. When I rushed downstairs, I found that the milk and cookies were gone. In their place were the telltale signs of a Santa visit that were the ultimate proof that he had been there, crumbs on the plate and an empty glass of milk. But in addition, there was something fantastic on the table. There was a gift that was so large my tiny brain couldn't comprehend it. And it wasn't under the tree, it was on the table. That's not where gifts went. By the time my parents got up, which seemed like an eternity later, they read me a note that had been left by Santa. The note explained that Rudolph was so happy with his gift that he got me something in return, and that he would wear his ornament proudly. I was overjoyed on opening the gift. It was an Ewok Village playset, which completely blew my mind considering I was at the height of Star Wars mania thanks to Return of the Jedi. I was at that perfect age to want to recreate moments of my favorite film with my favorite characters, the Ewoks. That was the year that I learned that Rudolph was one impressive gift giver, and all the other kids got it wrong simply asking Santa for toys. And only later did I realize how fun my parents could make Christmas by going along with my weird desire to get an imaginary reindeer a gift.
It's Ewok Village. I must see my friends.
Let's set. I'll get them.
Dear me, what a close call.
It's C-3PO, new Lowgrey and Ewok Village playset. Action figures, each sold separately. You have to put it together.
I'm Lowgrey, the Ewok medicine man.
Take me to your leader.
Your throne, O Golden King, will celebrate with special stew, a barbecue.
No celebration for me until my friends are free.
Very well, Your Majesty.
Ewok Village playset from Star Wars Return of the Jedi collection. Action figures sold separately. New from Kenner.
I want to thank the Robots Pajamas for sharing that discovery of not only Rudolph's generous nature, but for his wonderful memory of that Ewok Village playset. I'm sure many of us of a certain age can recall unwrapping a cherished Star Wars toy as well. Hey, it looks like Ron Longo is ready to share his own Star Wars toy recollection.
The build-up to Christmas in my house was always an exciting time for my siblings and I. Usually the day after Thanksgiving, all of us would get together and go through the Sears catalog toy section. And we would go through and we would circle all the toys that we wanted, and there was also times that we would actually cut the pictures out and mail them to Santa Claus. Now this Christmas specifically was in the late 1970s, so Star Wars was in full swing and there was a lot of great other toys. Now there was always a Christmas Eve tradition in my house that my parents had a big party that would go on all night. And I remember me and my siblings couldn't wait for the party to get over because we wanted everybody to go home so we can get to sleep and wake up the next morning and open our presents. Now there was one thing that happened on Christmas Eve on my block. Santa Claus would actually show up and give each kid one present the day before Christmas. Now I remember I was very excited. I didn't know what the present would be this year. And what I got was the coolest thing. It was a Fonzie doll. Now Fonzie at the time was the coolest thing on television. And it was a great doll. He had a removable leather jacket. You can move his thumb up and down. You can move his arms everywhere. And as a bonus that year, I actually got the Fonzie motorcycle. And I remember how excited I was just playing with Fonzie, jumping over things. But the next morning, I would even get a bigger surprise. Now, I was a big Star Wars toy person, too. I loved Star Wars. And I remember this was the late 1970s, so there wasn't that many figures out. And I had the main characters such as Han, Luke, Leia, and Obi-Wan Kenobi. And the one thing I always wanted to do was have these big wars. But I only had one Stormtrooper. So I asked for more Stormtroopers for Christmas. Now, the tradition on Christmas morning at my house was after you opened up your main presents, my parents would open up their presents, and then the kids were allowed to open their stockings. Now, I got some great toys that year, but I didn't get any Stormtroopers. I remember walking over to my stocking, and the stocking seemed fatter than it pretty much did any other year, and it was kind of heavy. Well, I dumped the stocking out, and out dropped 20 Stormtroopers already out of their boxes, ready to go with their guns. And I remember how excited I was and how special of a Christmas that was, just setting up my Star Wars play area and having this big war. And that was a great Christmas.
Thanks, Ron, for that memory of increasing the might of your Imperial Army. Although not stormtroopers, I do know that Gary Burton, my co-writer at The Retroist and very good friend, has an interesting memory involving the building of an army of Boba Fetts. And there is Gary now, with his holiday memory of another toy line.
Christmas 1977. I finally got the toy that I wanted so bad all year long, and that was my very own Steve Austin, $6 million man, who I watched on TV many, many months before I had to go to Germany and give all that up. Loved playing with $6 million man, loved playing with Steve Austin so much, and that's why the next Christmas, at the top of my Christmas list, was Maskatron and Oscar Goldman with the exploding briefcase. For those of you who don't know, Maskatron was the arch nemesis of Steve Austin, the $6 million man. He had different faces he could put on, Steve Austin's, Oscar Goldman's, and one of his own. He had a chest plate that would come off in different pieces of computer components. Really bad guy. His arms would pop off and fly off into the room. His legs would pop off. Great, great toy. Oscar Goldman, of course, was Steve Austin's boss, the leader of the OSI at the time. I also got Oscar Goldman that year, who had an exploding briefcase. If you didn't open it just the right way, the thing would pop open and all the files inside would be burnt. I did air quotes right there. But yes, it looked like he had just destroyed everything that he had dear to his life at the time. Both those toys were wonderful the next morning at Christmas, and I played with them for a long time. With Maskatron and his exploding flyaway arms, I wasn't quite too sure how to put them back on, and I ended up destroying the mechanism for one of his arms, and it never worked right again. So in all the Christmas pictures I have of Maskatron that morning, he's only one-armed. So I didn't tell my parents. I was so afraid that I had broken it forever. I was hoping it could be fixed, but I never figured out how to do it. So even to this day, my parents had no idea that I broke that toy on Christmas morning. Even now, all these years later, more than 30 years after the fact, I still have my $6 million man, Maskatron, and Oscar Goldman on top of my closet. One of the most cherished toys I have left from that time, and it's the only one I have left. Good, good memories. Friends, I hope all of you have wonderful memories this Christmas that you can tell again 35 years from now. Have a great Christmas and a wonderful New Year.
Thank you, Gary. I suppose at your age, you were too young to request the OSI to help repair Maskatron. Fun fact about that particular toy. It's believed that Kenner might have based it off the robotic duplicates created by Dr. Chester Dolenz in the $6 Million Man TV series. And the third face for the toy, which is an unidentified male, has been noted that it looks a little like the legendary actor John Saxon, who played the character of Major Fred Sloan in that show. Friends, there is Rockford J, who just so happens to be co-editor of the Saturday Frights Facebook page, with a recollection of a cherished holiday special.
I've always been a fan of Christmas specials. The world that I came into was a world of three channels. I was a child of the 70s, and when I was growing up, if you didn't watch NBC, ABC, or CBS, you didn't watch anything. And so when the holidays rolled around, Christmas specials were a wonderful relief from anything that wasn't a cop show or a private detective show or a doctor show or a lawyer show, blah, blah, blah. And even as cable came along with the television miracles that were the superstations WTBS and WGN, Christmas specials stayed special to me. But I realized as I grew up that most of the good ones that I really liked were from before my time. And I did not get sort of in on the ground floor of them. But all of that changed on December 17th, 1989, because I got to see the first broadcast airing of The Simpsons Christmas Special. Once we got cable, the cable company we had was actually pretty good. We had MTV within 6 months of the launch of MTV. And when the Fox network started up, the cable company had a channel already added to the package and ready to go. And I was a viewer from the very beginning. My favorite Fox show was The Tracy Ullman Show, which was a sketch comedy show. It had some songs. It was sort of a variety show revival. And it also had, which was unusual for the time, 30-second animated interstitials before and after the commercials that featured a family of characters created by a cartoonist named Matt Groening. And that was what would become The Simpsons. These segments were probably the breakout success of The Tracy Ullman Show and were certainly my favorite part of the show. I looked forward to seeing them every week. And Fox took notice and decided to spin those animated interstitial segments off into their own show called The Simpsons. And doesn't take a genius to know that that became a success far beyond anybody's imagination that is still running 29 years later and counting. Who knew? I did. That night, my parents and I had been to our church Christmas music service on the evening of December 17, 1989, and we had gotten finished with the service in time to grab some pizza and head home to have dinner and plop down in front of the TV to watch this new show that I was so excited to see. And I remember very well, my dad was sitting at the head of the dining room table, and my mom and I were sitting across from each other, and our little kitchen TV was in the corner, and at 8 p.m., we were ready to go, and the show started. And I assume everybody who's listening to this has probably seen this show at least 5 times, but in case you haven't, The Simpsons Christmas Special starts not with the traditional opening of The Simpsons, which is that sort of title through the clouds as some mysterious people sing a note in the background, but starts with The Simpsons in the family car careening towards Springfield Elementary to get the kids to the school Christmas pageant. And through that, we're introduced to the family and to the world that they live in. The plot of the show is a little bit O. Henry, with Homer not getting his Christmas bonus from the nuclear plant, and Marge having to spend the family's Christmas fund on getting Bart's first tattoo removed. Go with me. So not wanting to disappoint the family and not have Christmas the way he wants to have, Homer decides to take a side job as a mall Santa Claus, and he takes his pay and Bart to the dog track on Christmas Eve to bet all of his mall Santa pay on what he has been promised is a sure thing. But as they get to the track, they decide to instead let a TV trope lead them astray as they bet instead on a dog named Santa's Little Helper. What could go wrong? As Bart says, if TV has taught me anything, it's that miracles always happen to poor kids at Christmas. Well, TV betrayed him. The dog loses, they lose all of their money, and they go home, but with the dog. And instead of everybody being disappointed, everybody's happy to have a dog to share their love and their Christmas spirit, and, as Marge notes, to frighten prowlers. I loved the show. It was sharp, it was funny, it was a little bit dark, willing to turn things on their heads, but it also had a lot of heart. I laughed all the way through the show. My folks did not laugh at all, and the fact that they didn't laugh at all made me laugh even more. The Simpsons has gone on to become one of the faces on the Mount Rushmore of my geekdom, my nerddom, whatever you want to call it. I have been soaking in The Simpsons for the last 29 years, and eventually my folks came around. As it became clear that there were some similarities between Homer Simpson and my dad, we all found things in the show to laugh about, and to this day, my mom will even still sometimes quote the ow, quit it gag when Lisa and Maggie take turns repeatedly poking Bart's removed tattoo bandage. And I still watch that episode at least once every December. I've watched it already this December. I often watch it as I'm wrapping gifts or filling out Christmas cards. It's become a part of my holiday tradition, and I hope maybe it's become a part of yours. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Thank you very much for that, Rockford. I, too, became a fan of The Simpsons by way of the Tracy Ullman Show. And I also was there for that very special episode, Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire, or The Simpsons Christmas Special, as it is more commonly referred to. It looks like Allison Venizio is ready to share her own holiday memory, one tied to some of her fantastic articles on the Retroist site.
So I told this story on Retroist a few times because I've written about this a couple times, about the Cricut doll. I had seen a commercial on TV at one point, and it was a very deceptive commercial because she was walking, and this doll did not walk. But it, you know, completely had me entranced, and I really wanted this doll for Christmas. So that, for me, in 1986, when I was 4 years old, was a big deal. I really needed to have this doll. Not that I needed to have, but I wanted to have this doll. And my parents always, you know, made sure that they got a really good item that we really wanted. But my grandparents actually were the ones that decided to get this. So this wasn't even a Santa present. This was a grandparents present. And to this day, my grandparents, who are, you know, both gone, thank you very much for this. You made me very happy that Christmas. I really, really wanted this Cricut doll more than anything. And I knew what the box looked like. Even at 4 years old and I couldn't read, I still knew the shape of the box. So we came downstairs Christmas morning, and I saw this big rectangular box in the living room, and I remember being, I knew in my heart of hearts that this was the doll that I wanted for Christmas. This was the Cricut doll. I had been saying, oh, I need to have this. And, you know, not that I need it, but I really, really wanted to have this. And I was just so excited about, you know, thinking this was going to be it. This was going to be the one. Could not wait to get to opening that. And of course, I saw the box. And that was the one they wanted me to open last, but I actually started to rip the paper off the box. And that's how excited I was, being that age, being 4 years old, and knowing this was the exact thing you asked for Christmas, and you got it. So opened everything else first. And of course, got a lot of really great presents that year. I have pictures of that Christmas, and we have some really good, you know, gifts in there. I mean, I got some nice stuff. I got pound puppies at Christmas. There was a few other things that I got that were just, you know, really good. And then I got to that huge box, and I was so excited. And finally, I knew it, and it was mine. It was the Cricut doll, and I had to open it, so I ripped it open, and oh my god, it was Cricut. Like, I couldn't even read, but I knew it was, just because the picture on the box was right there, and I was so excited about it. And I opened the box, and there's pictures of me holding my Cricut doll in my hands and talking to my mom. So I was very, very excited about this, and to me, that was the greatest Christmas present ever, and she made it into a few of my Christmas, you know, photos that year. But for that, you know, very happy moment, I just got exactly what I wanted for Christmas. It was thrilled.
Thank you, Allison. Now I have the Cricut commercial jingle stuck in my head. Judging by the comments on the Retroist site, a lot of you also have fond memories of the Cricut doll. And obviously, you do not suffer from a crippling fear of dolls like I do. And there is Ashley Thomas, aka the Nerdy Blogger, with a memory those of us lucky enough to have had a large family remember all too well. The shenanigans you can get up to with your cousins on the holidays.
I think some of the best memories I have growing up from Christmas time are times with my cousins. My dad's side of the family is pretty big. My dad has 6 siblings, and there are 12 grandchildren on that side of the family. I'm number 9. My cousin Jenna and I are pretty close in age. We're only a couple months apart. There were a few years where Jenna and I had a sleepover Christmas night after the big family gathering. My sister and I were invited to stay at my aunt and uncle's house. And so we would stay over. It would be us and Jenna, her brother, Micah. And Jenna and I were always into something. We oftentimes would watch a movie that was not appropriate for us to be watching. I remember one year we watched Pretty Woman. We were 11, 10 maybe. Psycho. Another year, one of those great Alfred Hitchcock Christmas classics. And another year we watched Revenge of the Nerds. Also completely inappropriate for, you know, middle school age kids to be watching, I suppose. It was funny. I remember there was another year where my sister Whitney, Micah, Jenna, and I always, or we had like this battle, like this all-out war. I don't remember details, are a little fuzzy. I remember running back and forth in the upper level of their house and tossing things at each other, and there may have been dart guns or Nerf guns, I don't remember exactly, but I just remember having the best time just playing and running around together. Those are some of my favorite Christmas memories. You know, we live in different parts of the country now, so we don't get to see each other very often, but whenever we do get together, it's always a lot of fun, a good time. No battles or inappropriate movies in recent memory, but it's always fun to be able to spend time with those cousins. And those are some of my best memories of Christmas growing up. However you get to spend your Christmas this year, I hope it's a great one, and that you get to make lots of happy and fun memories with the people that you love the most. Cheers.
Many thanks for that, Ashley. I have some great memories of hanging out with my own cousins on the holidays. Thinking back on, well, what we pulled and somehow didn't get punished for makes a guilty smile spread across my face. This time of the season, it's always great to be in touch with friends and family, even when you're not stranded in the Retroist Vault. It looks like Morgan Wentworth, also known as Chuck DeHead, is ready to share his holiday memory, involving some crafty planning and how not to get caught snooping while trying to find your presents.
Greetings! My name is Morgan Wentworth. Some of you may know me from some of the forums as Chuck D. Head. I want to tell you a little bit about myself as a child at Christmas. There is within each of us a small child, a small piece of ourselves, from a time when our minds were a blank slate, and we looked at everything with a sense of wonder. This is the story of my inner child and how that little creep approached the Christmas season. Fellow retroists, a few of you may remember from some of my online postings that many aspects of my childhood may have been substandard, but one skill my mother had was the indiscriminate use of my father's credit cards. And at Christmas time, this played right into my hands. Soon after school started in the fall, I would become helpful. I would dutifully watch for the mail to be delivered each day to deliver it to my parents and to keep an eye out for the Sears Christmas catalog. I would always get to it first. My mercenary schemes needed to start early. I would take a squeaky red marker and circle all the items I wanted throughout the catalog. To create easy cross-referencing, I'd make a list of all the items, complete with the item numbers, prices, and the page where each item could be located in the catalog. Now it was time to act humble. I would bring the catalog to my mother and nonchalantly announce that it had arrived. And oh yeah, by the way, I made a list of what I want. I know we can't afford all that stuff, but it's fun to make the list anyway. The seeds of my mercenary scheme were planted. But like any other crop, this one needed to be nurtured. Uncharacteristically, my mother was usually on the ball when it came to buying things, and she ordered from Sears early, so the packages began arriving in late November. Time for surveillance. I knew that the vengeance for snooping would be swift and disastrous. I also knew that my skills for the snooping were up to the challenge. There were a few places where presents would likely be hidden. One was a closet. It wasn't locked, but it came with its own inherent security deterrent. Like any area of our house, the closet was a disaster area, and moving anything would be noticeable. A simple matter. First, a quick inspection of the crack under the door to look for traps, anything that may move or fall when I open the door. All looks clear, so I open the door slowly and grab my father's Polaroid camera and take several control photos that will allow me to make sure that everything is back in its place when my mission is over. Then, it was time to move on to the small storage shed where larger or more obvious presents might be hidden. There, I meet up with an old friend, the 4-digit combination lock. I'm sure that this may seem like a deterrent to an adult who is always in a hurry, but for a kid with no place to be, well, there were only 9,999 possible combinations, and therefore success was just a matter of time. Once I had a proper inventory, it was time for phase 2 of my campaign, and making sure that any important present that was missed on my list made its way under the tree. By now, December had started, and time was short. Hey, Ma, you remember that list I gave you with the Sears catalog? Well, I guess I should just pick a few things that I really want so that it'll make things easier for you. My time-tested strategies were very successful, and despite my Academy Award acting, I was never really surprised by the gifts I opened on Christmas morning. My dad, however, always seemed to be surprised, and for some reason, quite concerned. Among the most memorable Christmases were the 2 or 3 years when the Micronauts toys were coming out. I was crazy for the whole line, and so I really campaigned hard to get as many of the figures, vehicles, and playsets as possible. I still remember laying under the tree, looking at the twinkly Christmas lights through the translucent plastic of the Time Traveler figures. Nowadays, Christmas doesn't hold the same wonder as it did back then, but I can still get that Christmas feeling every time the Retroist puts out a new episode. Thanks to the Retroist, and for the rest of you, Platinum Rosebud. Thanks for listening, and have a great holiday season.
The greatest American hero will continue in a moment.
Now at Sears, a Christmas of red ribbon banners. including Sears best-selling video game, Video Arcade. On sale now for only $134.99, our lowest price ever. And don't miss the full assortment of game cartridges available at everyday low prices. Or try your hand at Sears' wide selection of one- and two-player handheld sports games. Our everyday low price is $12 to $13 lower than last Christmas. To wrap up a beautiful Christmas, you can count on Sears.
Thank you for sharing that, Morgan. I think many of us can recall laying on the living room floor or sitting at the kitchen table, agonizingly going over every page of a Christmas catalog, making sure to ask for that perfect gift. Friends, for what it might be worth, Morgan's memory was originally scheduled for the Retroist's own holiday podcast. When those plans sadly fell through, the Retroist was kind enough to share Ron, the robot's pajamas, and Morgan's memories with us. Next up is Lon Mills, with a holiday memory that is a bit of a mystery, one that perhaps you listeners can help to solve.
Hey, retro fans. My name is Lon, and I'm one of the administrators for the Retroist Facebook page, and I'm just responding to Vic Sage's request for favorite Christmas gift memories. And one of my favorite Christmas gifts is the Snow Raiders sled line. And I'm not sure too many people remember this. I have not encountered anyone who does other than me and my brother. They were inflatable sleds. You laid prone on them, but they were flexible, so you could steer it. There were handles at the front, and then there was kind of like a gap, but it's attached in the middle. And then you could steer the sleds as you're going down a hill. My maternal grandparents had a hill, literally a hill as a backyard, and it was perfect for just sledding in general. But I always thought the Snow Raiders line was fantastic. We had my brother had the Hunting Hawk, and I had the Snow Falcon. And like I said, they're inflatable. It had just, you know, printed images of, you know, kind of like not animated, but you know, cartoonish images of a hawk and a falcon on them. I can't remember if there were other names in the toy line, but since they were inflatable, if you had a good enough snow or if it was frozen, that you just smoked down the hill. They were awesome. And even with the internet, I cannot find images. I can't find YouTube videos. As a kid, I remember seeing ads on TV for them, and I just can't find anything retro to kind of reflect on it. All I have is my memory of them. So, Merry Christmas. Happy sledding. Thank you.
Many thanks for that recollection, Lon. If anyone out there has more information on that brand of sleds, make sure to give us a shout so we can learn more about it. Perhaps in another pop culture Retrorama podcast, I will share my own sledding tale, one involving a miscalculation and a speedy drop into a drainage ditch. Friends, just before we begin to wrap this first episode up, I thought I would share a particular holiday memory of my very own. This would have been back around 1978. I was 6 years old at the time, and my family was gathered at my grandparents' house. As we were eating, the phone rang, and my grandmother got up to answer it. She then said it was for me. It was Santa Claus. I think it's safe to say I was a precocious child and definitely outgoing. As I looked at her holding the phone out to me, though, I got scared. Could I have done something wrong? I didn't recall Santa ever calling me before, and I took the phone from her hand and hesitantly said, "Hello." A big, booming voice full of mirth and happiness filled my ear as Santa wished me a Merry Christmas. I recall smiling widely at my grandmother and father as all of a sudden there was a commotion on the line. It sounded like something was walking on boxes. That's when Santa good-naturedly called for Rudolph to stop walking on all the kids' packages. I laughed out loud, and old Saint Nick said the reason he called was that he got my request about wanting the Godzilla Shogun Warriors toy. But sadly, the elves weren't able to make enough. But not to worry, because he made sure they created something special to make up for it. We said our goodbyes, and I then excitedly shared with my family what I had heard. Early the next morning, I woke up to find something extra special indeed. I may not have received Godzilla, but I did now have a 24-inch version of both Great Mazinga and Dragon. I literally didn't open any of my other gifts. And my father and myself played with those two giant toys on the kitchen floor for hours until later when the rest of our family woke up to celebrate the holiday. By the way, I learned many, many years later that it was my Uncle Charles on the phone. He had slipped away earlier and managed to drive down to the local gas station where he called me from a payphone. That is one of my cherished holiday memories. Thank you again, friends, for taking the time to listen to all of us share our own memories. I naturally need to thank everyone who contributed to this holiday special. Allison Venizio can be found on The Retroist, Facebook, and her own spot on the internet at AllisonVeniziowrites.com. Ashley Thomas, the esteemed nerdy blogger, can also be found on Facebook as well as nerdyblogging.com. The Robots Pajamas has a Facebook page as well as a website at therobotspajamas.com. Lon Mills hangs his hat at the Retroist Facebook page as editor. Not to mention, he's been known to share retro-related items on the Retroist Clubhouse Facebook page. You can read Rockford J's work every single day over on the Saturday Frights Facebook page. Gary Burton, who's been a guest on the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast and is host of the upcoming TuneIn podcast, can also be found hanging out at the Retroist Clubhouse Facebook page. Ron Longo is part of the IndieCast, the podcast devoted to all things Indiana Jones, as well as discussing the soundtracks of John Williams. Morgan Wentworth, a.k.a. Chuck D. Head, can be found on Atari Age, as well as other spots on the internet. As for myself, you can generally find me every single day on The Retroist, the Diary of an Arcade Employee Facebook page, and the Saturday Frights Facebook page. If you have any comments on the podcast or maybe suggestions for a future episode, you can contact me at vicsage@retroist.com. The music you heard at the beginning and ending of our show is courtesy of Earl Green's thelogbook.com, kindly used with his permission. Naturally, we need to thank the Retroist himself, not just for hosting this new podcast, but for creating a spot on the internet where we fans of all things retro can get a daily dose. When you need your retro fix, and we all do, hop on over to the Retroist. Now, here's a hint on what I'll be talking about on the next Pop Culture Retro-Rama podcast. A big thanks, by the way, to Rockford J for coming up with the name for this podcast. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, 'cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children use it. Let the children use it. Let all the children do get. This has been a Retroist production. Thank you for listening, and have a better one. Goodbye.